Rational discussion, common sense, open debate. RCR, Reality Check Radio with Paul Brennan.
Wednesday morning on RCR with Paul Brennan. And of course, you can text us 2057, email inbox at realitycheck.radio. We got a huge amount of response to our Tech Tuesday yesterday with Stephen Sykes talking about EVs. It's a subject that really interests you. Well, Liz, who operates our inbox, has forwarded those comms to Stephen Sykes. So I'm sure he'll be commenting on some of them in our next Tech Tuesday, which, of course, is next Tuesday. Now, coming up after this break, I'm going to be talking with a really interesting person, former staunch Labour supporter, Kiwi computer software pioneer, and he's been a recent guest blogger on the Carl Dufresne blog. He's 91-year-old Perce Harpham, and he'll be on in just a moment. Talking about his concerns regarding the strengthening power of the Māori elite, its influence on the Labour Party, and why he's done with the Labour Party. Coming up next.
One person's hate speech is another person's truth. And I would much rather allow extremists to have their horrible say than shut down all of society in a vain attempt to stop what we might consider to be extremism.
So if you classify one thing as hate speech, then that can stretch and it grows into so many other areas, and who gets to control it? And that's the problem.
Barefaced abuse could be considered hate. I'm no fan of that. But calling out things that we disagree with or activities that are obviously questionable isn't hate speech. That's free speech.
And to have government tell us what we can and cannot say, what we can and cannot impart as opinion, is just an outrageous attack on democracy and on freedom.
On Reality Check Radio, I'd like to welcome Perce Harpham to the program. Have you heard that name before? Well, he's been around for a while. Founder of the Progeny software company, a pioneer of the New Zealand computer industry, also a former Green Party candidate. And he has also written a blog as a guest post on Carl Dufresne's blog on the 26th of June. I want to welcome Perce to RCR. Hi, Perce, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Getting older, but still okay.
91, that's pretty good.
Counting.
How does that feel?
Well, there's a price to getting old. You get all sorts of stupid little things that happen and go wrong. I used to joke I was getting older, slower, weaker, and more stupid, and it's true.
Well, okay, thank you for the heads up. Anyway, I want to get on to what you were talking about in the blog post, but it really interests me that you were a pioneer of the New Zealand computer industry. When did that start?
I started Progeny in 1968, and that was after I had installed the fourth computer in New Zealand for Dulux. I had worked for them for 14 years and had wonderful mentors who got me sorted out as a management trainee for ICI Australia New Zealand. And with my wife, I was sent to England for 18 months to look at anything that was interesting and report back.
Okay.
And that's where my start from computing came.
For Dulux, the paint company, right?
Yes.
So what was all that about? What was that system for?
Well, for statistics, invoicing, accounting. We started to do a lot of stuff about forecasting, budgeting, developed a different stock control system, which was very effective, and a huge number of different things. And when Britain joined the common market, there was a great panic here in New Zealand, and it looked as if a lot of industries would be shrinking, and I wanted to protect my staff. We had done a lot of early interesting things, and I thought we should set up a separate company in Dulux to sell those ideas. The Australian board would not allow it. They wanted simply to move all of us to Australia, and that caused me to go off and start a company on my own. That was really very successful for 21 years. I had about 174 staff. We set up branches throughout Australia, New Zealand, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Beijing in China.
Oh, so that would have been really early for China, right?
Yes, first visit to China was in 1982. My wife had a distinguished career, and a lot of people remember her as the public face of the Commission for the Future. And she pointed to what was going on in China. So we actually visited there in 1982, ended up selling some machines to them. But there's a whole story on that.
Yeah. What sort of machinery are we talking about? Because I remember from that era, you know, mainframe computers and those big tape machines spooling around. Is that the era?
Yes, it is. But there were two lecturers in the Wellington Polytech who were teaching electrical engineering and, of course, teaching about computers. And they came up with the idea of having a computer specially designed for education. And they got the education department interested. Bank for Development that was in existence at that time put up some money. The education department got involved. We came into it to provide the heavy software. And it's again a long, sad story. We developed the Poly computers, which you may even have used at school. And they did everything that was wanted, but the government of the day decided that they saw no reason why teachers should get computers so they could do even less work.
Yeah, well, now look at it.
Yeah.
That's how it ended up. Yeah.
Huge story.
Okay, well, that's fascinating. I want to read the first sentence of your blog post. After some 16 years of loyal support, I've left the Labor Party because it has left me. I'm so ashamed at how my party is destroying our legal system and democracy that I wish to be completely disassociated from it. That's pretty strong.
Well, it's very true. I'm distressed. There are so many people in the Labor Party, I've had a lot of encouragement from Grant Robertson, a lot of work that I did on basic income. And I was on the Policy Council and there worked with both Grant and David Parker, Megan. It's old age creeping in. I can't remember.
Woods, I think. Isn't it Woods?
However, an awful lot of respect for those people, and I cannot understand how they have contracted what I can only regard as a mental disease of Maori mania. They're in breach of the party constitution, which says that they will do things for all people. They're actually breaching their oath their parliamentary oath, which requires them to uphold the manner and so on of the king. It's all totally incomprehensible to me, and it all seems to be based on the fear that if they fall out with the Maori, they will certainly lose their total authority in Parliament. They'll have to have another partner. But the confusion that is in there, it's really very well exemplified by a particular thing. Just can't lay my hands on it. There was a bill drawn from the members' bills where they put put up acts that they want, and then those are drawn random. And this one was to have, let's find the bit.
We've got plenty of time for you to get to it. It's no problem.
Okay. Let me just find. Yes, the Parliamentary Members' Bill, the Plain Language Bill by Rachel Boyack, was drawn from the lottery and is now law. There have been a lot of amendments, but it's ended up saying, the purpose of this act is to improve the effectiveness and accountability of public service agencies and Crown agents, and to improve the accessibility of certain documents that they make available to the public by providing for those documents to use language that is A, appropriate to the intended audience, and B, clear, concise, and well-organized. However, it has many references to Te Reo in it, including 4B3, nothing in this act prevents or restricts a reporting agency from including Te Reo Māori in any relevant documentation. Truly, the lunatics are taking over the asylum. That kind of contradiction is there in all of the acts that are now being put through, where Māori words are being stuffed into the middle with no explanation of or definition of what they are or what they mean. And even the Chief Justice has felt compelled to break the normal law and comment on what government is doing, saying effectively that the courts are going to be overwhelmed trying to work out what these laws, which are a mishmash of languages, taking Maori words out of one context, putting them into a different context, and it becomes impossible to sort out what the hell they mean. So I'm just seeing the destruction of our law and the destruction of our democracy. We've been so proud of having little racial prejudice, and we had one law for all, set down in the treaty very clearly that it was to be the English law, and it was to apply to everybody. Everybody was to have the benefit of it. But it has been perverted, twisted, screwed up, and I just really fear for the future of the country.
You're not the only one, by the way.
Okay.
I'm telling you.
almost all laws now have Maori words in them, and there are rights being given to Maori which are different from everybody else. And it's, you know, we can get into detail, but it's total confusion.
I think you make the point in your blog that this all goes back to, you know, some kind of Maori block of power and the Maori seats. Yes. And that even back in the very early days, you know, there was enough power in those seats to maintain them when they were supposed to time out pretty quickly, actually. But given that they're only, Maori are only, what, about 14% of the population?
15, I think.
Yep. Oh, 15, okay. Well, okay, well, give or take one. Where's all this power coming from? And you mentioned that, you know, you've worked with Grant Robertson and David Parker, and kind of, by the way, you described them at that time, they seem like rational, normal, sensible people.
Very good people.
Are they that intent on staying in power that they'll throw all of us under the bus? Is that what's going on?
That appears to be the case. Remember, John Key bought an election by giving Maori foreshore and seabed. Helen Clark had resolved the question by setting down that it was all owned by everybody, but John Key threw that legislation out and gave it all to Maori. And if you think about it, we call the giving of large sums of money to the party, or even quite small sums of money to the party or to MPs, as corruption. And it is. I've seen it. No amount of money will guarantee you a seat. But with the Maori seats, where there were originally four set up in 1865 to give Maori a voice, and otherwise they wouldn't have had one, because at the time you had to be a property-owning male in order to be able to vote. And with Maori owning everything communally, couldn't vote. So they were given four seats.
Yeah.
Now, Maori hierarchy can effectively guarantee who will get those seats. And there are now seven Maori seats. There's an argument there should only be five because they use the wrong statistic. But that is a huge power. And Maori came to an agreement with the Ratna Church, that the Ratna Church would get their followers to support Labour, and Labour would help support the Ratna Church. And that guaranteed a couple of the Ratna Church people in Parliament for about 50 years. That's still in place, effectively. But the power of a bloc is such that they can, if they keep on niggling away, they get little things. For example, the idea of having Maori seats is that you have a Maori role. And at least there, people do have to provide some evidence of Maori ancestry to get on the roll. But they can choose whether they go on the Maori roll or not. And there's been a recent illuminating statement from one of the mongrel mob that they are directing their members not to go on the Maori roll because whoever is elected Maori role will either be Maori or very heavily Maori leaning. And so they don't need to vote on the Maori role. They're better to go on the general role. They have a choice in doing that. You know, Pākehā can't choose to go on the Maori role, but Maori can go on the general roll. And if they choose to give an address so that they're in a marginal seat, then by voting Labour, they can get Labour in, a greater chance of getting Labour in. So even this subtle little change can give you huge effects further down the track. So the other thing is, of course, that let you ask some other questions. I think I've half answered that one anyway.
Okay, so yeah, you have. So it sounds like from what you're saying, and I think you make the point in the blog too, that 25% of the parliamentarians, the MPs, identify as Maori or some, you know, to some level of Maori, Maoridom or whatever. So those seats really aren't necessary anymore, based on that, surely, because we've got the representation at that level already, just on those numbers. So who's going to step up and say, okay, time out now. You know, these seats are done, finished, closing them down, don't need them anymore. Who's going to do that?
Well, a couple of elections ago, National had the guts to say that they would. They didn't make a big thing about it, though. And they dither now about whether they will or not. They're still anxious to get the Maori vote, and they're actually trying to get it, putting up some candidates. We have Winston Peters. Here's a Maori. Here's an Apui. And also ACT, David Seymour, is a Maori. So there are actually many Maori who do not want to go back to an old tribal system where they have a hereditary leadership. They actually, a lot of Maori want to retain democracy and a rule of law. But there's so many people now who have, they don't have Maori predecessors, they have Maori descendants. I'm one of those with my wife, Myra, 67 years. We have three children, eight grandchildren, and four great-grandchildren. Now, great-grandchildren are diluted now to being a quarter Maori. But one of them, they're just little wee kids at the moment, but one looks Maori, another certainly looks Pākehā. They've got the same parents. So with the way that the Maori are given rights now, one of them is going to have a voice in what you can do with your property, but what happens to your water and all sorts of other things. And the other one won't have those rights at all. So it's a glorious mess.
Very divisive, isn't it? Very.
Yes. But this whole business of management and competence comes into play. Maori managed to pervert all sorts of things. The medical system has been in crisis for a long time. Both parties have been unable to get it properly sorted out. So now with it in crisis, it was decided it was sensible to reduce the number of health boards, and I agree with that. But I don't think I'd have chosen to do it at the time of real crisis. I'd have tried to get it sorted out a bit as it was before reorganising it. And then on top of that, they're creating a Maori health authority, which is going to have to take ability and capability and staff away from the existing system. And that's justified by really screwing around with the statistics. For example, it is claimed that because Maori have about a 7-year less life expectancy than Pākehā, that proves that the system hasn't worked for them.
That assumes that no one has any input into their own bloody health.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, there is the person also actually involved, just saying.
Well, back in 1940, we had a difference in life expectancy of about 23 years. Well, different for male and female at that stage. That was before all the females started smoking as well.
Right, okay.
So what happened then was that from 1940 down to about 1982, 83, 84, it dropped from 25 for males down to about 6. In fact, closer to 5 for males. And then the benefits were all cut, and it leapt up again, so that it was about 9 in the year 2000, and now it's 7. Now that helps to show that, as Elizabeth Rata, education professor in Auckland, has said for many years, the problems of Maori are a matter of class, not of race. And we have 50% of Maori as in the prison population. Funny, it's 50% of Maori who are in poverty. So,
yeah,
an awful lot of it is if you have more kids than usual, more kids than the average, rather, and you have one of them sick, you have to take time off work, you probably live in the outlying suburbs, you have an old banger of a car to get you to work, there isn't one left for the partner, you just don't get them to the doctor. And also, you can't afford to buy them fruit and all that kind of thing. So there's a whole raft of stuff in there where the diagnosis that the Maori hierarchy put forward is totally wrong. It is not a matter of race. It is a matter of class, in other words, of money, where you can do the same things for your kids as other people.
Well, surely that can be easily solved. Transportation issues can be solved. You know, if there's trouble getting to somewhere, you can easily put in infrastructure to deal with that. You know, it seems to me that there are simple solutions available without having to put the country at risk, you know, for its future.
Well, I agree with that absolutely.
And it surprises me the sensible things aren't done. There must be a reason for that. Either they're all serially dumb, or there's some kind of benefit to people by convoluting it and making it more complicated and fighting a race war instead of a class war.
Well, Maori hierarchy are doing a great job, particularly for the Maori hierarchy, not necessarily for all Maori. But what we should be doing is looking at the problems as a whole, and there should be one law for all, and one process for all. Help people with the process, sure. And there are lots of little things that are done. There are many things which are done privately and by private organizations, and so to help out. It doesn't all have to be done by government. But there are just so many things which have been
we could be here all day.
Okay, free waters and all sorts of things.
Yeah. And we've talked about that a lot here. Here's the big question, because you've got a lifespan to look back on, and you can reflect back on a lot of years. And referencing that, you can possibly see what's on the horizon. How long have we got to sort it out before we descend into something that's very dark?
Well, if we put Labor back in power again, it is going to be very, very difficult. There are a whole collection of other things I understand to be in the pipeline, which they'll probably try to rush through before the election.
Well, they're trying to shut us up with censorship, number one.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you talk about one vote, one person, one vote. That's as equally as sinister.
Well, they've spent over $100 million in getting press muzzled and putting out their propaganda.
Well, they could have got a few people to the hospital or to the doctor.
Yes.
Well, what it proves is they're just not serious. They're just not serious. They're full of BS. They have to be.
Yeah, I just don't understand. There are such good quality people there, and it has to all come down to a question of power.
Are they scared? Are they fearing something? People do things for basic reasons. Is there some sort of fear in there? They've been threatened. We've got to ask these questions.
There has to be fear. I cannot comprehend it, that so many good people can all go in the same wrong direction, and in the whole 64 of them, there haven't been three who would say no. Four, I guess, might have had to be, would say no, and that would have stopped it. Secondly, I'm appalled that the Governor General seems to just sign anything put in front of her.
She has
a power to hold things up.
She's one of them, mate.
Yeah, and it's terribly unfortunate, because I've always been a royalist on the grounds that the Crown can dissolve Parliament, can refuse to ask somebody to form a government because their policies are wrong. The Crown objects to them. I think with this out-of-control government, I hope that the Governor-General is keeping King Charles.
I don't know if we could ever rely on him either, quite frankly.
Well, here's...
I think he's a goner too.
Well, if he is, way back, the prerogative to dissolve Parliament was carried out in Australia.
Yeah, Gough Whitlam, I remember.
Yep.
Just.
And to me, that is a reason to keep monarchy. There is a reserve power there to deal with governments such as we now have. And I hope somebody will step up and organize a massive petition. Whether it has to go through the Governor General or not. But the Maori have joined in with petitioning the King to do things about the terrible colonization that they have suffered from. Well, that's fine. Why don't all the rest of us petition the King as well? And as far as colonization is concerned, that's another perversion of a name. It implies that New Zealand had the same thing happen as happened in Africa when the Europeans went in with their superior weapons, took over large tracts, enslaved the people, had them mining and so on, didn't pay them anything, sold them.
Yeah.
Whole colonization thing. That's what colonization stands for. New Zealand wasn't colonized. New Zealand asked to become a colony. The only place in the world that I think has ever asked to have someone come in to save them from themselves, because in 35 years of having muskets, they had diminished their population by about 30%. With Utu, they had to go on doing it, which is why they asked for the Queen's writ to come to New Zealand. So yeah, they weren't colonized, the absolute reverse. The settlers paid the Maori to help make the roads, put in the wharves, bridges, all that sort of stuff. It took years and years and years before Maori paid any rates at all. They have a whole lot of privilege in terms of rates and even for businesses now, where Maori business, Maori authority business, only pays 17.5% tax on profits, where ordinary businesses pay 28%.
Oh, gosh. Okay. And there appears to be nepotistic relationships when it comes to government contracts as well. I just wonder, though, Purse, because it seems to me, and I think also to a lot of our listeners, New Zealanders are asleep at the wheel, man.
Absolutely. One of the really frightening things is, apart from propaganda put out to influence the older people and everybody else, they've been stuffing us down the throats of the kids in school.
That's right.
And that's had an effect on the parents. And you find if you talk to quite a number of very sensible people under the age of 30, they are totally convinced that the treaty took away all our rights and gave them to Maori. And that's the right thing. That's what we should do. We shouldn't, the non-Maori shouldn't really have any rights. We should be governed by the Maori. But I think the counter to what the Mongrel Mob guy was saying is that for this election, whether they've been a Labour Party supporter in the past or not, or a Green Party supporter or not, you should only vote for people who are committing to have one law for all.
Yep, I agree. I think most people agree on that. How could it be anything else?
Well, you have it in various places. If you look at Lebanon, where the different religious factions have fixed numbers of seats, you have an absolute mess at the moment. Look at any of the tribal societies, Somalia and places like that.
Yeah, not pretty. How do you think it'll end up, Purse?
I'm afraid. I am terribly afraid. I do not want it to go on as it is.
What's the inevitable end game, do you think, if it carries on like this?
A hell of a lot of people will leave the country. If I had significant money and was a few years younger, I would already have planned my exit to either Australia or Canada or the US or perhaps back to Europe or even some parts of South America. And I'd be all set up so that if the election puts Labour and the Greens back in charge, then I'd be off.
Wow. Though it seems that even the alternative to that is kind of only 1 or 2 degrees away from what we already have anyway. So I'm wondering if it'll be different any which way. Because here's the thing, Parliament, no MP came out. None. No one has acknowledged the trampling of human rights there. No one. Now, if you can't bring yourself to doing something that basic, you can't really be expected to bring yourself to do anything.
Right.
Yeah, you're useless as tits on a bull, quite frankly. Right? I mean, if you can't stick up for the basics, then you're not fit for purpose. Forget it. So if you're throwing with them, it's a bit of a faint hope, but it's faint, isn't it? Let's be real. If they want power and money, they'll do what they have to do. They'll do what they need to do to maintain the power and sod the rest of us. That's the feeling I get.
Well, I'm afraid it looks that way. I think the hopes are with ACT, to some extent with Winston. Yeah, I just don't understand. There are such good quality people there, and it has to all come down to a question of power.
Are they scared? Are they fearing something? People do things for basic reasons. Is there some sort of fear in there? They've been threatened. We've got to ask these questions.
There has to be fear. I really cannot comprehend it, that so many good people can all go in the same wrong direction, and in the whole 64 of them, there haven't been three who would say no. Four, I guess, might have had to be, would say no, and that would have stopped it. Secondly, I'm appalled that the Governor General seems to just sign anything put in front of her.
She has
a power to hold things up.
She's one of them, mate.
Yeah, and it's terribly unfortunate because I've always been a royalist on the grounds that the Crown can dissolve Parliament, can refuse to ask somebody to form a government because their policies are wrong, the Crown objects to them, and I think with this out of control government, I hope that the Governor General is keeping King Charles.
I don't know if we could ever rely on him either, quite frankly.
Well, here's.
I think he's a goner too.
Well, if he is, way back, the prerogative to dissolve Parliament was carried out in Australia.
Yeah, Gough Whitlam, I remember.
Yep.
Just.
And to me, that is a reason to keep monarchy. There is a reserve power there to deal with governments such as we now have. And I hope somebody will step up and organise a massive petition. Whether it has to go through the Governor General or not. But the Maori have joined in with petitioning the King to do things about the terrible colonisation that they have suffered from. Well, that's fine. Why don't all the rest of us petition the King as well? And as far as colonisation is concerned, that's another perversion of a name. It implies that New Zealand had the same thing happen as happened in Africa when the Europeans went in with their superior weapons, took over large tracts, enslaved the people, had them mining and so on, didn't pay them anything, sold them.
Yeah.
Whole colonization thing. That's what colonization stands for. New Zealand wasn't colonized. New Zealand asked to become a colony. The only place in the world that I think has ever asked to have someone come in to save them from themselves, because in 35 years of having muskets, they had diminished their population by about 30%. With Utu, they had to go on doing it, which is why they asked for the Queen's writ to come to New Zealand. So they weren't colonised, the absolute reverse. The settlers paid Maori to help make the roads, put in the wharves, bridges, all that sort of stuff. It took years and years and years before Maori paid any rates at all. They have a whole lot of privilege in terms of rates and even for businesses now, where Maori business, Maori authority business, only pays 17.5% tax on profits, where ordinary businesses pay 28%.
Oh, gosh. Okay. And there appears to be nepotistic relationships when it comes to government contracts as well.
Absolutely. One of the really frightening things is, apart from propaganda put out to influence the older people and everybody else, they've been stuffing this down the throats of the kids in school.
That's right.
And that's had an effect on the parents. And you find if you talk to quite a number of very sensible people under the age of 30, they are totally convinced that the treaty took away all our rights and gave them to Maori. And that's the right thing. That's what we should do. We shouldn't, the non-Maori shouldn't really have any rights. We should be governed by the Maori. But I think the counter to what the Mongrel Mob guy was saying is that for this election, whether they've been a Labour Party supporter in the past or not, or a Green Party supporter or not, you should only vote for people who are committing to have one law for all.
Yeah, I agree. I think most of us agree on that. I mean, how could it be anything else?
Well, you have it in various places. If you look at Lebanon, where the different religious factions have fixed numbers of seats, you have an absolute mess at the moment. Look at any of the tribal societies, Somalia and places like that.
Yeah, not pretty. How do you think it'll end up, Purse?
I'm afraid. I am terribly afraid. I do not want it to go on as it is.
What's the inevitable end game, do you think, if it carries on like this?
A hell of a lot of people will leave the country. If I had significant money and was a few years younger, I would already have planned my exit to either Australia or Canada or the US or perhaps back to Europe or even some parts of South America. And I'd be all set up so that if the election puts Labor and the Greens back in charge, then I'd be off.
Wow. Okay, it's been really interesting talking with you. I'm so glad you made some time for us. I hope you enjoyed the experience.
Yes, I have, and I'm very pleased to be able to say something of what I think.
Yeah.
Because it worries me a lot.
And I have to say, you as an elder member of our society, 91, thank you for your contribution to our country. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that.
All the best.
And same to you.
RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.